Oklahoma quarterback Jackson Arnold adds his name to a long list of transfer portal quarterbacks already. Joe Cook's going to join us to preview Texas playing Georgia in the SEC championship and what the Longhorns need to do. And we're going to tell you why Oregon deserves their flowers in a big matchup with Penn State this weekend. Check it out and more on the Thursday edition. Crane & Company. Hey, appreciate everybody listening out there. Hope you guys are ready for Christmas. It is coming up. Regardless of how you listen to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it doesn't matter. Please leave us a 5-star review. Keep sharing the show. We really appreciate you guys. The hottest topics in college football right now involve who's getting into the playoff or the structure of how we decide who gets in. But there hasn't been much talk about the only undefeated team left in the country, number one ranked Oregon. And it's baffling to me. Every other year, we'd be gassing up the number one team like a diesel truck at a gas station. In a year where consistent good play has been rare, Dan Lanning and Oregon have been the model of consistency. That isn't to say they're perfect, they're not, or that this year hasn't been full of parity, because it has. Both of those things are true. But in year one of them being in the Big Ten after losing Bucky Irving and Bo Nix, who are both balling in the league right now, Oregon has been the only team to win every game and have shown the most balanced attack in the country. You can't find a team that plays better complementary football when they need it the most. Maybe it's because Dylan Gabriel isn't the Heisman frontrunner anymore, or we have the first year of the expanded playoff, but we need to take some time and give the guys in Eugene their flowers. Lanning has successfully turned Oregon into a team that doesn't rely on track meets or trickery. They just punch you in the face for four quarters, and they rely on their physicality. They don't worry about who the opponent is, only putting their best foot forward and doing what they can do and what they can control. Coach Lanning's story is one of rags to riches in this business, and his team reflects that. They don't play like a bunch of rich kids, even though Nike's backing them. They're tough, gritty, but can also be flashy when they need to. He has mastered the art of hiring coordinators that can implement their system but maintain the overall identity that Dan Lanning wants. Oh, and he just happens to be one of the best recruiting head coaches out there as well. I think the main reason his players play for him the way they do is because he's genuine. You can see that in the videos they put out. There's nothing fake about this guy, whether it's going good or it's going bad. And there's nothing fake about Oregon being one of the elites of our sport. So we can talk about the seeding, who's getting in, who's going to be left out. But let's take a moment to give credit where it's due. Having said all that, the Ducks know the job is nowhere close to being finished. They'll be doing today what they always do, grinding, working on the fundamentals of blocking and tackling, and being themselves. And so far this year, it's been a damn good look. David Cohn, former Michigan quarterback, my brother, former Western State, Colorado wide receiver, Blaine Crane. Cohn, there's a ton of talk about the sport, and that's great. I love that. But you don't hear a lot about what Oregon has done their first year in the Big Ten. And we talked before the season about whether their team's going to the Big Ten, teams going to the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, and teams going to the ACC. Dan Lanning built Oregon to be able to translate into any language in any conference. And we're seeing that, man. It is such a cool story, because if you know Dan Lanning and how he got here, you can understand why his guys play their guts out for him.
No doubt, man. They've just gone about their business and really had to overcome kind of a shaky start. Remember the first couple of weeks, you asked me to my face, do we think Oregon is fraudulent? Well, they managed to right the ship, and really for half the season, they've been in the number one spot with no other questions. It's been the most reliable thing in college football. Now, in terms of the last 3 or 4 weeks, why they've been underrated, why no one's talking about them, I think that's just a result of the 12-team playoff. Like
Agreed.
You mentioned, expanded Agreed. Playoff. And I want to prove my point by asking you guys a question. Can we just for a minute run out an experiment here on what we would be talking about and the argument we would be having rather than Alabama and South Carolina and Miami at 10, 11, 12, and 13? What would we be talking about right now if we still had one more year of the 4-team playoff? Here's the college football playoff rankings. Oregon, obviously, at 1. Texas with only their one loss at 2, Penn State at 3, Notre Dame at 4, Georgia's right there at 5, about to play number 2, and then the Buckeyes at 6. So we'd be talking about, man, did Michigan knock the Buckeyes out of contention to be able to make the playoff? We'd probably be saying, if Oregon, undefeated all season, loses to Penn State in the Big Ten championship game, are they out of the 4-team playoff, or do they slide to Georgia. 4? What happens if Georgia, with 3 losses, beats Texas? Is Texas moved back? Notre Dame sitting there not playing in a conference championship? That's where the Notre Dame no conference championship game would be criticized, because everyone surrounding them would be in a conference championship game this weekend. How do you think it would be working out right now if we had a 12-team playoff? We'd certainly be talking about Oregon more.
You mean a 4-team?
4-team. Yeah, that's what I said.
4-team playoff.
Yeah, what I meant.
Yeah, I know. We would be asking the question you asked, because we saw this with Georgia. Like, if they lose the conference championship game, is there a way that Oregon's not going to be in the top 4? But the absolute most contentious point of all of this would be if Notre Dame deserves to be in the top 4 after not only not having to play in the conference championship game, but losing to Northern Illinois. Because how could you make the argument that if Oregon goes undefeated through the season, loses to Penn State in the Big Ten championship, you're going to put them behind a Notre Dame team that has the same amount of losses, didn't play in the conference championship, and lost to Northern Illinois? I think that would be the big, and I think Oregon would be in regardless because of that. Even if Georgia did beat Texas, right, with the 2 losses, I think Oregon would be supplanted in there. Obviously, if Texas beats Georgia, they would be in there as well. What I would find fascinating, too, is how would they handle SMU if SMU beats Clemson, goes to 12-1. Let's say Oregon beats Penn State, knocks Penn State out. Would there be a possible chance of an 11-1 SMU? Or, David, even an 11-1 Indiana moving up enough that didn't play in a conference championship. So it would be wild. It would be absolutely wild to be talking about that. And that would, regardless of how contentious and intense it gets, talking about who gets into the 12-team playoff, whether we're talking about Alabama or Miami or South Carolina or Ole Miss, to me, it would not even get close to matching the level of vitriol that would be being spewed in the national media and on social media about Notre Dame possibly getting in with that loss to Northern Illinois and not playing a conference championship game if Oregon were to lose.
Yeah.
That's what I think. But our poll today, Blaine, is what, Oregon versus the field?
Yes, it is. Who would you take to win it all, Oregon or the field? I got the beautiful Christmas
sweater. I would
Christmas sweater.
I appreciate that, David. Thank you.
I would probably bet the field, just because while Oregon, and again, I just opened by giving them their flowers, maybe another reason they're not being talked about as much is because they haven't been overtly dominant. Mm-hmm. They've been dominant in the sense of they are the team that hasn't lost a game, that went through the non-conference or the conference schedule they did, and the Boise State win just looks better and better every week when Boise wins. And to my complimentary football point, Blaine, there is not a better example of how Oregon plays complimentary football than that Boise State game. Look at the special teams. That's what won it for you. You really want to go back to it with those returns. That was the difference. You look at the Wisconsin game here recently. Defense won that game. You look at the Ohio State game. Offense won that game. You know, you're not going to play good in all 3 phases, Blainasium, every single game. But you need to play good in 2 out of the 3. And when you're not playing good in all 3, and one of the 2 you're not playing good in is offense or defense, the other side of the ball has to make up for it. And Oregon's found a way to do that. It's team ball.
Great teams can do what?
Win in multiple ways.
They can win in multiple ways. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why you brought in Dan Lanning. The guy is not only a defensive savant, was years under Kirby Smart, but the guy's just a good head coach, man. He's a genuine guy. Players can connect with him. The one kind of the cool thing you can kind of bring out of it, go back to that Wisconsin game. What's Wisconsin known for? Jump around, right? When jump around came on, Oregon was having more fun with that than Wisconsin was. And that's a direct channel from their head coach from an attitude standpoint. There's not a game that I've seen Oregon walk into to think that they can't win. And if you walk around with that type of mentality, with that type of chip on your shoulder, and be humble at the same time, like Dylan Gabriel is, Dylan's not out there flashy doing all this. They just have a bunch of guys who know what their job is, and they just get it done week in and week out.
And they keep just moving forward. That's the thing. They just keep moving forward. Now, I've seen some people say that the scariest thing about Lanning being at Oregon is that, you know, he's a guy that is fun. That's a fun brand. We look at Nike, we look at the different jerseys. Here's where this is the scariest for the rest of college football. And I think Michigan, in a different way, the Ellison guy thinks we're $231 billion. Phil Knight is filthy rich. Filthy rich. with a PH. But Oregon could get players with a head coach that was just, you know, maybe not super personality, but they could buy a bunch of recruits. What's so dangerous about Oregon is they have a coach that it's fun to play for. Mm-hmm. They have a coach that you can believe in and you can trust, and he wants the best for his players off the field and on the field, matched with an absorbent, crazy amount of money. When you hear the numbers that Oregon was able to use to get guys like Naeem Offord, and so it mixed with just wanting to play for Dan Lanning, that is horrifyingly dangerous for everybody else in college football. It is like, you know, the Power Rangers, you have the Red Ranger and you have like the Yellow Ranger, Pink Ranger, First Crush, shout out Kimberly. But they would come together and make the Mega Ranger when they had
to. Oh, yeah.
This is like the Mega Ranger coming together in college football.
No doubt. I think I was the Red Power Ranger for Halloween multiple
times. We all were, David. We all were.
Not scared to admit that. One more point on the topic of picking one dominant team over the field. It was easier to do that in a four-team playoff. I think you go win a semifinal game than win a
You got a 25% chance.
Now with a 12-team playoff, man, say what you want. You can cry all you want about Alabama not getting in the play, or they shouldn't get in the playoff, or Ole Miss shouldn't get in the playoff. With 12 teams, some really good teams are going to sneak in there, and they're going to be tough to beat.
How good do you think Oregon really is? You see the scares, the Boise State scare, the Wisconsin scare, Ohio State, the way they played after Ohio State just got ran by against Michigan. How good do you think Oregon is? Are they shoulders above everybody? Are they barely peaking?
I would say it's somewhere in the middle, because we've seen elite teams in college football. We've seen teams that are so much better than everybody else. You would take them versus the field. We've seen it at Bama. We've seen it at Georgia. I remember seeing it at Florida with Urban Meyer. I think in a year where there isn't an overall unbelievably elite team, a lot of teams have gone through scares. Only one of them's walked out clean, and that's Oregon. So I do think Oregon has shown the ability to be better than everybody else. But they are as vulnerable as any number one team has ever been going into a college football playoff. I think, to me, that's the best way to explain.
I'd say it, they're the best team in the country that could lose to a dozen other teams.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's a good
way
to
explain it. They could lose to maybe a dozen teams in the country.
I think that's a really good
Which is fun.
Yeah. All right, let's get
All right, Chad, hit that like, hit that subscribe button. If you donate on topic, it will get read. Appreciate all the compliments on the sweater. Means a lot. $5 donation from Chris Allen. Appreciate it, Chris. My Ducks beating Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan in their first year is hilarious. So is SMU, Texas, and ASU owning their conference. Go Ducks, baby. We can't be stopped.
Well, I want to point out a differential here, though, and it's in Oregon's corner, Chris. You bring up a good point. And by the way, Blaine, that sweater is, show them where you put the beer.
Right here, baby.
Yeah, right there. Show them. North Swole,
North
son.
North Swole. You put the brewski right here. Come
That's
on.
Right.
Bar crawl. Look, here we go.
Holidays
come.
For everybody. Oregon, when you look at the schedule, they played Ohio State. They played Michigan, right? They played most of the big dogs in that conference. And I'm not taking anything away from Texas. Texas didn't have to play most of the big dogs in the SEC when you look at their schedule. Who's the best team that Texas had to play in the league? A&M?
Georgia
outside of the game they lost. Georgia, right? So that's one. You look at SMU. All credit to Rhett Lashley. Hell, I picked them to be where they're at. They didn't have to play Clemson or Miami. So while they are all special, and I agree with you, right? I mean, look at Arizona State going into the Big 12, right? Doing what they're doing. But the Big 12 wasn't a dominant conference this year. There's no fantastic team in the Big 12. There's a bunch of good teams, I think. But I think that what Oregon did is a little bit different, maybe a little extra special because of who they played and what conference they played.
I agree, but I think it'll be worth nothing if you don't win this weekend.
I agree.
There's going to be nothing in saying, well, in our first year, we made it to the Big Ten championship game, but we lost to Penn State. Finish the deal.
Yeah.
Finish the deal and then be able to say, we came in and won the conference in year one, which is impressive.
That's exactly right.
Let's go to the American Patriot. It says, this is becoming impossible. Billionaires can buy the best players. It's not a fair game anymore. It's not even fun to watch. Phil Knight is just owning recruiting.
Listen, do I love the way that NIL has been rolled out in college football? No. But I think there's a blind spot for a lot of college football fans here. I hope everybody realizes these mega donors that are at these big places, they didn't just become donors when NIL was legal. Mm-hmm. Players have been getting paid for a long, long time. Players have been getting paid under the table a lot of money. What has happened now, and I think where your argument comes in, is now since it's legal, it's infused more donors to be able to come in and do it. Like, it's not just Nevin Shapiro taking guys out on yachts in Miami. People did used to get paid. My father got paid. I've watched guys get paid. Now there's just more donors. So I don't fall in the camp of, oh no, now kids are getting paid a ton of money to go to these schools. Kids are getting paid a ton of money to go to Auburn, Bama, Oregon, Georgia, USC. Look at Reggie Bush. This isn't a new phenomenon. To quote Jimbo Fisher, NIL's been around forever. Y'all are just hearing about it more now. And he's exactly right.
Signing day was yesterday, right? Here's the top 10 as it finished. Texas, Alabama, Oregon, Georgia, Buckeyes, Michigan, Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, and Tennessee. That could have been a top 10 list from really any year of my lifetime.
Did you see what the Solomon Thomas kid said that flipped from Florida State to LSU?
Hmm.
Man, I should have got this clip before the show to show you. This is, I have never seen this before. I've seen kids' moms get up and walk off. I saw Landon Collins' mom do that when he chose Alabama. Solomon Thomas went on there and said, I was waiting on a phone call for some determinant factors about where I was going to go. And he says something. And then he says at the end, and he's signed with LSU. He said, I'm just disappointed I couldn't go to Florida State.
Really?
How crazy is that? How crazy?
They dropped the ball at the end?
Well, I guess they didn't offer as much money in NIL as LSU. The kid literally said, you can look this up. I'm not knocking LSU or anything. He said, I'm just disappointed that I couldn't go to Florida State.
See, that's really interesting because I wonder how close the offer was. And this is kind of the point that I was making to Matt Moscona when I said the pitch from Michigan to Bryce Underwood right down the street and they just won a national championship when they had J.J. McCarthy. It must have been super easy. Even if you take the money aside, like, for instance, if Long Beach Poly is offering $12.5 million and Michigan's offering $12 million, you're not going to take the extra $500,000. So I wonder in that situation, if he really wants to go to Florida State, how much extra?
I think we view this through the prism of how we grew up. I think if you're a person that grew up with no money, you may take that extra $500,000.
No, well, like, $500,000 is a lot of money.
No, and I'm not
but
saying
is it
you're
$50,000. Well, if you grew up with no money, aren't you having people who
50? I think
you?
Is different to me for him to make that choice. It had to be a pretty hefty difference, right? Of money, like for me, if and again, everybody's different. Like some people, you know, even if they grew up with no money would say, you know what, I'm going to go where I'm going to go. I'm not going to take the extra money or whatever. But most people are going to take that money. So what was the difference? Mm-hmm. Because for you to be that upset about it, they had to make you, what do they say in The Godfather, make him an offer you can't refuse? They must have had to make an offer you can't refuse. But like if I think about it like in my perspective, because, you know, there were times when I was younger where we lived in a triple wide in Dadeville, Alabama with a hole in the floor. But then we got money and lived in a three-story house off Wire Road. Like I just, and then I got older and there were times where I had money and then times where I slept in my car for 2.5 months. And if somebody would have offered me a $2 million contract or a contract that was worth $1.25 million, I'm going to take the $2 million contract. So I think it depends on kind of where you are at and how you view it. But, I mean, again, it's hard for me to feel sorry for you when the worst thing that's happening to you is you got to go to an amazing institution and they're going to pay you an extra $800,000. Like, what a great situation to be in. But part of me kind of felt for the kid a little bit.
I just wonder how that's going to play itself out over the years.
Yeah.
Like, because everybody who goes to campus gets homesick. Your first couple weeks, your first couple months, you're looking for a reason.
And this kid's
to
from
leave.
Edna Carr,
I'm just
David,
telling you.
In like, Louisiana.
Are
how
you,
crazy
are
is
you
that?
Quicker to pull the trigger on going to the transfer portal when it's wide open all the time and your heart wasn't in the place to start? That's what I said about Bryce Underwood.
To me, I think it depends on the contract.
Yeah, true.
Like, it depends on the contract. All right, we're going to get Joe Cook in here in a minute, but first, I'm going to go to these transfer portal quarterbacks, David. We got some updates.
Yeah, here's the list of them so far. And look, there's a bunch, but we had some big names even over the last couple days. Jackson Arnold from Oklahoma, now in the transfer transfer portal. We heard months ago that Miller Moss from USC was going to enter the transfer portal. That's official as well. Connor Wegman at Texas A&M. Look, we thought he was going to do some great things for A&M this year. He had some big-time games, but it looks like that's Marcel Reed's job right now. Connor Wegman now in the portal. Noah Fifita from Arizona regressed this year despite having Tech McMillan, one of the best wide receivers in the country. But still, two solid years at Arizona. Those are some of the top names at quarterback in the portal right now.
Yeah, I've seen Caden Salter too, and I want to let everybody know the portal opens up on Monday, I believe. So you can officially enter it on Monday. What you're seeing tweeted out right now or X'd out or whatever, I don't know what they call it, is they plan to enter the transfer portal. And we got some updates today. On3 put out that Jackson Arnold has heard from, I think, Georgia, Auburn, and Mississippi State. I've been asked a ton, like, which quarterback should this team take? Obviously, a lot of Auburn fans, like, who should Auburn take? It is all circumstantial, and it's based on multiple factors. What system do you run? How much time does the head coach have to be able to make this? I've had some Auburn fans who are like, man, you know, we would love to get Jackson Arnold. Hugh Freeze don't have time to develop a guy, man. Like, you got to get a guy that can come in right now and save you, basically, on the field. So to me, I look at a guy like Noah Fifita from Arizona. And you say, all right, what's the circumstance with Fifita? Is he a good enough runner to operate an RPO-style system and still keep people true on the zone read? Not that he's not athletic or he's slow, but that's really not his game. That's why I keep coming back to, and there's going to be more guys that enter the portal. John Mateer from Washington State entered as well. His offensive coordinator just got hired at Oklahoma. To me, he's the number one quarterback on the board. That's, to me, the Mateer kid from Washington State. Probably going to end up with his OC at Oklahoma. So if he's off the board, if you run an RPO-style system, why would you not go get Caden Salter? And people say, oh, well, he had a bad year this year. Well, Jackson Arnold didn't have a great year. Noah Fifita didn't have a great year. Connor Wegman didn't have a great year.
Miller Moss
didn't have a great year. There's a reason you're in the portal.
Yeah.
There's a reason you're in the portal. So when I look at it, if you're a team like in Auburn, Caden Salter knows the terminology of Hugh Freeze, right? He understands that offense. He'd be surrounded by better personnel. So you can, it's just like the stock market. You can only get back what's offered in the market. Cam Ward might not hop in there this year, right? You may have an unbelievable tackle that Arkansas, one of the best guards in the country, just hopped in from Arkansas. So you can only get what the portal bears, but you got to go get somebody if you're one of these teams. So that's what's going to make it fascinating. There's going to be more names that enter the transfer portal. It's going to be crazy. It's just a wild time in college athletics right now.
Blaine, we've been talking a lot about Hugh Freeze and the transfer portal. He coached Caden Salter at Liberty, right? So how are you feeling right now about who Auburn should go get? Or you also got, what, you flipped Deuce Knight.
Yeah, right? If you're going to bring in Jackson Arnold, you might as well play Deuce Knight.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why you bring in a guy who's not proven when you need somebody proven this year.
So who would you like to
see? I'm going to get Caden Salter.
Yeah,
he would get you excited.
I said it yesterday on the show. I'm going to get you. If for Auburn, you don't need someone stale in the pocket. You need a guy who can do both because your offensive line is not great. Caden Salter is one of those guys. Noah Fifita is one of those guys, although Noah Fifita did have a down year, in my opinion, especially all the
interviews. A lot's going on in that Arizona program.
For sure. I just think Caden Salter right now would be the best answer. It wouldn't help you to go get Miller Moss. Okay? It's not going to help you to go get Jackson Arnold. You need someone to come fix this, and you need someone to come fix it now, because if you're Hugh Freeze, you don't have another year to wait. Or is it the Billy Napier situation, right? Or do you play Deuce and he comes in?
Or Walker White
and he comes in and he looks good. And you win a couple games you're not supposed to. You might lose a couple. Mm-hmm. But toward the end of the season, you are trending up. Does Hugh Freeze have enough cachet that Auburn program to pull that off?
See, that's what I think Michigan's going to do. The more that I watch Bryce Underwood's tape, the more that I think the kid's going to come in and play day one. Even if it's a 7-5 season next year, I think now, you know, Coach Sherrone Moore has now beaten the Buckeyes when they're number two. You sign this guy. You're paying him a lot of money.
He bought some equity.
I think he's going to be a day one starter in the past couple weeks since I've been watching his tape. But some other programs, like you're talking about with Auburn, or what about Florida State? Leaned on the portal this last year to bring in DJ Uiagalelei. We saw how bad the season was. You've replaced both coordinators. What do they do at quarterback?
Well, and again, there's more names that could come out there. But that's why, like, I think maybe a Miller Moss at Florida State makes sense to me.
Could work.
I think Connor Wegman at Florida State.
Look at what Haynes King's done since he left Texas.
I know. Like, I think, again, it's what do you run? So when you look at Florida State, Jordan Travis and Mike Norvell, I believe, can adjust to his personnel. DJU was a pro-style quarterback. He just couldn't throw it like a pro. He wasn't going to run you anywhere. He wasn't going to just run over everybody like some people thought. We tried to tell y'all before the year. But, like, to me, whether it's Fifita, whether it's Wegman, whether it's Moss, that makes sense to me. When the argument becomes between Jackson Arnold and Caden Salter, that's when it kind of gets interesting because those are both dual-threat guys. I consider Jackson Arnold a dual threat guy. Look the way he ran against Bama. Jackson Arnold can really run. I consider Caden Salter a dual threat guy. Neither one of them are elite throwers of the ball yet. But the one difference from the Auburn perspective we were talking about, Caden Salter's been in this offense. He hadn't been surrounded by this type of talent. Now, he also hadn't had to play an SEC schedule. We've seen Jackson Arnold in the SEC. Now, I know they were so beat up at wide receiver. Nobody got hit by the injury bug offensively as bad as what Oklahoma did in the wide receiver room. They were the absolute walking wounded. But what does this mean if you're Oklahoma and you bring in Mateer with Michael Hawkins Jr., who I think is a good player as well, a young guy? So there is domino effects that happen with all of this.
It's just so hard nowadays to just do it with a guy who can only just pass. It's so hard to get where you want to be. Like, look at the teams. In the Oregon, Dylan can create. Quinn is a little bit different, but we're starting to see a lot more of who, especially in this game, probably Arch Manning in certain situations. Drew Aller at Penn State can somewhat create. I mean, Riley Leonard at Notre Dame can create. Carson Beck can create. Will Howard can create. Noah, the Tennessee's quarterback can create. It's so hard to get where you want to be with a guy who's just a statue in the pocket in college football. And you want to know why Mike Norvell looked so good last year? Because of what Jordan Travis can do. If you bring a guy in like Miller Moss, who's just going to sit in the pocket and try to throw you to a win, you're not going to win every football game. You need guys when the play breaks down who can make something happen. Lenore Sellers, right?
DJ Lagway.
Those type of guys.
Nico Iamaliava.
Banged up and he's hurt and can't play against LSU.
Well, that's a risk you got to take.
Now your fans are crying that game shouldn't count because he got
well. Like I'm not going to get like, the business of playing a guy and not doing certain things because I'm scared he's going to get hurt.
Agreed. But it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone to say you want the guy who touches the football the most to be really athletic.
Yeah.
And to do a lot of things.
If I want a car, I want it to be able to drive fast and look good. That's like the best case scenario. The problem becomes when that guy's not available, right? Because that guy's not going to be available for everybody. There's not a bunch of Cam Newtons running around. There's not a bunch of Jordan Travises running around. That's why when you get one, that's why like Dylan Gabriel's perfect to me. Like Dylan Gabriel can run well enough where if I'm a DC, I'm like, God, like we can't just not take the quarterback on the zone read. Or if the play breaks down, he can run well enough, right? Even a guy like Carson Beck, you're like, all right, he ain't winning any races in the 40, but if he's got to put his head down and get 5 yards, he could possibly make a guy miss, or he knows when to escape through the pocket. Quinn Ewers a little bit of the same way, and there's something to be said for extending the play from the pocket as well. The problem with guys like DJU is he couldn't do any of that. DJU wasn't a plus. If you're not going to be able to run at all, if you are, that's what makes Kirk Cousins so amazing to me. Kirk Cousins couldn't run to the fridge to get a glass of milk if his life depended on it. Yet he can play in the NFL and ball because he's one of the few guys. Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Tom Brady was slower than me reading a thesaurus. Like, but he still was able to make it. It's just, it's such a crazy time right now. And you do want to find guys that can do multiple.
I'm interested, too, in Notre Dame because they've gone to the portal the last 2 years. They got Sam Hartman. Then they got Riley Leonard. Like, what are they going to do moving forward here? Obviously, they got C.J. Carr still on the roster. Young guy, up and coming. So.
Well, like, how many years do you go mercenary? Or do you just turn it into a, hey, why don't we just, every year, we'll just try and go get the best quarterback in the portal? I mean,
it's tough to live like that.
It's tough to live like that because look at Florida State.
Yeah.
You're not always going to hit, and that's not a great position to hit. All right, we got Joe Cook. We're going to bring him on here in 1 second. Y'all go ahead and throw him on there when he's ready. But until, let's go to the chat.
Let's go to Sloan Carter. What's up, Sloan? He says, my cousin is a coach for Liberty and grew up a big Auburn fan. Salter is likely at AU from what I've heard.
Well, you know, there was some talk last year. I think he even took a visit to Auburn last year. So we'll see again. It's a lot easier for me to learn Japanese, all of it, when I know 75% of it. Now just teach me the contractions and what do I call a rug, and we'll be able to figure it out. Drop me in there, and I'll take you somewhere great to eat. But speaking about great to eat, this season has been delicious for Texas and Texas fans. We got our friend first ever, Joe. You're the first ever Texas guy officially that we've had on Inside Texas on 3. They do a fantastic job over there. First off, thanks for joining us. And if you were going to rate the meal, the 2024 meal for Texas fans, are you giving it a Michelin star? Maybe two, maybe three?
I'll give it two. It's funny you mentioned that because Michelin just showed up in Texas. And I know what they're good at with tires, they're good at with food too. I give it two stars, I think. But it's got the chance once the rest of the courses come through maybe to earn that third one.
And when you look at this team, and we had Rusty Manziel on from Georgia earlier in the week, they're expecting to see even more Arch Manning than what we've seen recently. And I don't think it's just because Quinn's ankle was banged up. I know y'all attached that bionic leg to him or whatever that worked out in the game against A&M. How much Arch Manning are you expecting to see this week? Is there going to be an extended package? Have you heard anything about, hey, we're going to give this guy some run?
I bet it looks pretty similar to what happened with the A&M game. I think it was only, four snaps. Now,
yeah.
Granted, one of them was that first touchdown in the rivalry in 13 years, which is going to be a great piece of trivia, along with Arch Manning being the starting quarterback for Texas in their first SEC game. But that seemed to be more of it was utilized for red zone. Because, yeah, Quinn Ewers is a little bit hampered. He seems fine enough when it's between the 20s. Things break down in the red zone. And as we saw, Quinn Ewers fumbled in the red zone or close to it. So I think that's more of a special situation thing. And obviously they didn't deploy every aspect of it too. Arch didn't throw the ball, just had that 16-yard run, had a couple negative runs. There's more to it. And I think they were obviously showing that for Georgia, but also saving some for Georgia as well.
Do you have any updates on the injury situation on the offensive line for Texas? Because they gave up 7 sacks in the first game against Georgia, 10 tackles for loss, I think, and it needs to be all systems go. I don't care how Georgia played against Georgia Tech. Do you feel like nobody's 100%? You stop being 100% when you're being born or after you're born, well, or why you're being born, depending on how it goes. But do you have an update kind of on the offensive line and where they're looking?
Yeah, the big one you're asking about is Kelvin Banks, the left tackle. He had a very tough day against Jalen Walker, Mykel Williams, those guys, as did the whole offensive line. And he got, people will say rolled up on, but I've seen rolled up ons that are a lot worse than what happened to Kelvin Banks. Was in a boot, was listed as questionable questionable or probable. Had a lot going on yesterday with signing day. Sark talked today as part of a SEC teleconference and said that he practiced. Sark's pretty coy. He doesn't say what practice entails. It could have been picking up pads and giving it to Trevor Goosby, who played in his place and played extremely well against Texas A&M. But it could be putting on the helmet and taking part. We're trying to figure that one out. But this is a team that if they want to reach their goals, definitely would like to have Kelvin Banks back there and not have to rely on Goosby to go against, you know, Walker and Williams and even guys like that Texas recruited, like Jonel Aguero and a few others, Damon Wilson. Mm. So that'll be one to watch. I'll be looking for that, not only in the injury report or student athlete availability report tonight, tomorrow night, and even Saturday as it hits lunchtime and game time.
Just a quick follow-up before I get to Cone on that. Do you think it would be smart, and do you think, and again, I know it's your first year in the SEC, and Texas fans want everything, and I understand that every fan wants everything. Would it be smarter if he's 65, 70% just to hold him because you guys are in the playoff, or to go ahead and take that risk and play him to try and win the SEC championship? What would Joe Cook do?
Here's the thing. I try to think about what the gladiators on the battlefield think. And if it's like, well, I've got this rocket launcher, but this 22 is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and use the rocket launcher if it can get the job done. Maybe a little, I don't know, life and death is a little bit different. When thinking that way, Sarkisian thinks about how do you win the game in front of you? How do you win on the field battle? They're competitors. They may not have this, you know, let's think too far ahead mentality. And I think we've seen that with how they deploy Quinn Ewers, especially in the games that matter, good Oklahoma, point. Georgia, even going to when he wasn't looking great in some other games, they've used him. So I think the thing to do is to try to get him in and get him playing well, because, hey, if you beat Georgia, then you have a much more extended break. You're off until New Year's Eve instead of having to play 10 days later. It's a risk you have to take, but it's football. It's a gladiator sport. I think there's trust in Trevor Goosby, especially after what he did against Texas A&M and some of their defensive ends, but I think if you can put your first rounder back out on the field, you do so.
I agree with that. Look, with those analogies, David, he's going to fit right in.
Oh, you're going to do just fine, Joe. I know you don't want to think about the prospects of Texas losing the SEC championship game, but let's say that that happens. You played Georgia twice. You lost to them twice. There have been a lot of criticisms about Texas's schedule this year, which is crazy considering you came into the SEC and you played Michigan on the road, but it's the reality of the situation. Texas loses the SEC championship game. Where do you think they would fall in the college football playoff rankings based off what you've seen from the committee so far this year?
I'm going to assume an Oregon win to go along with it. I don't think they go further than five. From what the committee said, they don't really want to move teams up as a result of not playing. Now, granted, here's the thing. I feel like Notre Dame's going to be that. They're going to get that five just because of the way the rankings, the seedings, all that work out. So I guess, you know, looking at individual numbers is maybe a fool's errand considering what Notre Dame status is with this 12-team playoff. If they lose, they're getting a home game. I feel very, very confident in that. I don't see any reason to drop a team from two all the way to nine or anything like that or to the ninth seed because of how the rankings work out. So I feel really confident in a home game. And, you know, that's part of what makes this exciting. There are positives, there are negatives to the 12-team playoff, but one of the true positives is these highest stakes games, maybe ever in some of these home locations, these home stadiums. And you can expect that if Texas doesn't get the bye and they have to play at home in Austin, then it'll be a pretty rocking time at DKR.
I think you're right. What's the one thing Texas has to do this Saturday to avoid Georgia really jumping out to an early lead and having such a dominant performance again this year?
They have to hang on to the football. I know people look at Trevor Etienne's stat line and saw, oh, three touchdowns, 87 yards. Well, those drives that he finished in the end zone all started on Texas' half of the field or pretty close to it. And a lot of that had to do with Quinn Ewers throwing picks and fumbling the ball. Even Arch Manning fumbled the ball. Or Quinn Ewers just threw one interception, but he had fumbles. Arch had fumbles. Those three, you know, in minus territory turnovers are what gave Georgia short fields, because there was really only one lengthy drive that Georgia went on. And to their credit, it was the one I think that made it 30-15. Other than that, the Georgia Bulldogs would get maybe into field goal range and then hit those field goals. You know, you had 18 points from Etienne, you had 12 points from Peyton Woodring. And I think if you go with the old coach's mantra of every drive ending with a kick, that game looks a lot closer. I'm not saying it's different, but it's definitely closer. Instead, the Longhorns turn it over four times, have three lost fumbles, and Georgia gets to operate in some short fields. And yeah, that's not a team, even when Carson Beck's not at his best, that the 10 around them aren't going to let, you know, short fields, 40-yard fields go unpunished. So that's the key to me, is hanging on to the football. As we saw, you know, the turnover battle was 4-3 last time. Nobody wanted to seem to do it, but that four being greater than three was a difference.
Well, that's why I keep saying the most underrated position in this game, and it's not sexy, it's not flashy, is the punt team, especially after Texas got that punt blocked against A&M last week. That's something they've really got to shore up. Whoever wins the net punt average in this game is going to control the field position. I expect the turnovers to be down because they were so bad last time, and these teams are really good at adjusting and moving on. Whoever wins the net punt average plus whoever pins the other inside the 15 the most, I think they're going to win the football game.
God, you were a special teams coach, weren't you?
Special teams,
it's
special
time. It's just oozing out of you. Well, Joe, I want to ask you this. We've seen this as a different type of Georgia team this year, maybe not against y'all, but the last couple weeks against Georgia Tech and UMass, that will give up big yardage on the run. And the way y'all dominated Texas A&M at the line of scrimmage, if you're Texas and you have that headset on and you're Sark for this game, are you pounding at Georgia for four quarters?
I'm trying to see if that will work this time. You know, after the Georgia game, and Steve Sarkisian's even talked about this in the past 10 days or so, they made an emphasis like, guys, we got to find at least one of our run schemes that works. And they found it with kind of running that wide zone play. And Quintrevion Weisner, who basically went from a committee member to committee chairman, has done a great job at the running back spot. You know, you saw him bounce off tacklers, keep moving forward against Texas A&M. The offensive line was getting 3 or 4 yards of push seemingly every play against an A&M defensive line that gets a lot of praise. But when you run right at them, they have struggled. And Texas did that pretty well. I'm looking at stats from the first game. Texas rushed the ball 27 times for 29 yards. And I know that includes sacks in college.
Yeah.
Still, that's not, you know, I think sack adjusted, it only got to like 60 or 70. So it wasn't anything special. But after Georgia, after they played Georgia, they were able to run the ball pretty well against Vanderbilt, took care of business against Florida, obviously, had pass and run there. Arkansas, they bled the clock. Kentucky, they ran all over. And then A&M, they ran over. So they feel like they found something. And I know that that Georgia front is formidable, but so are some of the other fronts in the SEC. So is Florida. So that's a, there's a lot of 350-pounders on that Florida front. Mm-hmm. Deion Walker was still there. Arkansas had Landon Jackson, and Texas A&M had their front. So there's probably some confidence in Sark and in that offensive line that they can get that going. If they're able to do that, then all those guys I kept talking about earlier, like Mykel Williams and Damon Wilson, it's a little bit tougher for them to start going after whoever's playing tackle. If you can get even just no negative plays, that would be a big positive. I know everybody wants 4 yards of carry, 5 yards of carry, but even if you're just not going backwards and setting up 3rd and 7 instead of 3rd and 12, that would help Texas a lot. And they're going to look to the run game to see if that'll happen.
Yeah, Sark's balanced. He's going to gut you like a fish.
All right, let's go to KC. KC, we got some questions here for you, Joe. Hashtag Ask Joe. If Texas makes it to the Natty, what opponent do you think would be the toughest matchup for them?
Oh, man. I'm trying to think of the bracket in my head. It's hard not to look at the team they're facing Saturday. I know the committee would probably try to put them on opposite sides. So that one might be one to consider. Let's see if it's one. If Texas wins and Ohio, or if Texas wins and Oregon wins, that puts them 1-2. It's hard not to think Oregon, considering what they have on their defense. And Dylan Gabriel, I know it's a different team, but he found a lot of good success against Texas last year. That's a team that seems built similar to the Longhorns. Looking elsewhere, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the SEC teams in there. I'm not afraid of Indiana, although I'm glad that they have had the season they have. Notre Dame, maybe their defense, and now that they seem to finally get a little bit more going on offense and have a good special teams unit. That one may be, if they come together and meet, that would be one of the lowest scoring games I can recall. But you know, you're number two for a reason, and that's because you've accepted all comers, you've taken them all on, you've only lost to one, and it's because you put out your worst performance. Other than that, you know, basically every other team is thinking, it's like, oh, how do we get past Texas? How do we defeat a team that seems to have so many strengths? And you know, when you're thinking about that, you're at a new level of the sport, not something we've been used to talking about when it comes to the Longhorns. But to me, it's Oregon, just because they're 12-0 for a reason. Yeah. They're in the Big Ten title for a reason. They've got balance. They've got a great roster. And they're a team that can just beat you in multiple ways.
All right, let's go to a $3 donation from I'm Horned Up. What's up, man? Appreciate the donation. He says, Joe, with our offense as good as they are with what Sark does, what do you think makes this year's team's defense so good? Is there anything special you see?
I think it's just the ability of the secondary in running various types of, you know, coverages just to not get beat. Yeah, you may be able to get like a 20 or 30 yard throw, but you're only getting one of those a drive. And if not, and you're getting a pass breakup, you're getting an interception, you're not getting just extra yardage on this Texas secondary. And it's a lot of veterans. There's only one true sophomore in the mix, and it's Malik Muhammad on the field side. You got a likely Thorpe Award winner, and Jahdae Barron playing one corner.
He's nice.
Former walk-on and Michael Taft playing safety. Another, and then there's three Austinites in the secondary. Clemson transfer Andrew Makuba at another spot, and then Jalen Gilbo playing nickel. All those guys are great at communicating. They understand defenses, and they tackle really well as well. So it's just really hard to find yards, big yards, through the air against this Texas defense. And when you've got guys who can cover for, you know, 2, 3, 4 seconds longer than most, a pass rush that features a young five-star like Colin Simmons, a star transfer like Trey Moore, and some fifth-year, you know, grown men in the defensive trenches like Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, who had a big game. It's going to all work together in a way that it hadn't done for Texas in a while. And I think it really does start in the secondary, and that'll be important again Saturday because of what Carson Beck has seemingly been able to do through the air.
Yeah. Well, Joe, you definitely lived up to your last name. Somebody cooked here. We're going to have to get you back on. I know Texas is going to continue to play. They're going to be in the playoff. Please tell everybody where they can find you guys' work. You do a fantastic job over there. On3 does a great job in general. But can you tell everybody, our audience, where they can find you?
Yeah, we're over at InsideTexas.com, part of On3. You can get a 7 days trial for just $1. And we're at Inside Texas basically everywhere else. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, I think, is Inside Texas Football. That's the only different one. So we're all over. If you search Inside Texas, you'll find us.
Well, man, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Gentlemen, appreciate y'all.
Appreciate it, Joe.
Look, there we go. That's how you bring in Texas with a bang right there.
Yeah.
All right. The phone lines are open, 1-855-236-3228. We're expecting a close game between Georgia and Texas. But quickly, let's talk about a close shave. While the PC police Grinches running all these corporations are tearing down traditions, Jeremy's Razors is here to help you save them. Cyber deals are here. You can save 30% off site-wide from the top to the bottom, baby. Stocking stuffers under $15, shave, hair, and body bundles under $50. Plus, you get free shipping on qualifying orders. So keep Christmas, Christmas. Order now at jeremysrazors.com. Some exclusions apply. See website for details. We use it. Show them that beautiful box right there. That's that Precision 5. Let me tell you about the Precision 5 razor. All right. Not only does it come in a great box, it gives you a great shave. Like I mentioned, the deals are site-wide, but whether it's hair care, body care, facial care for your facial hair, Jeremy's Razors Precision 5 is precise, and it's oh so nice. Merry Christmas. You look great. All right, the phone lines are open. We're going to get to them. Let's get to the chat before we do. David, you tell me when it's time to snap.
Let's go to JD Downs. He says, Oregon is going to take a beating against whatever SEC team they go up against, with the exception of Alabama. Play Alabama has no business in this field.
Ooh.
Dang.
I just...
Coming in hot.
I could feel you more if you're like, hey, I think the SEC teams are having an advantage against Oregon, or I feel like they're going to be able to beat Oregon, but take a beating? Like, give me a score, like lose by 20?
What did Georgia beat Oregon by when you took them in the opener that year?
Oh, God. You talking about the murder?
50?
Yeah. Is it was hard to come back from.
Don't do that.
That'd be
a bad look.
Don't do that. You got to get by Penn State first.
True.
You know, this game against Penn State.
Well, they're going to be in either way.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to be in either way. It's just, I don't know, take a beating. And with the parity we got today, I mean, there's no SEC team that I look at and I'm like, yep, that's big time Bama, or that's Georgia when they're better than everybody else. I just don't see that.
$5 donation from the state. Appreciate it, man. He says, don't trust Oregon in big games. I promise you they will find a way to blow it. You can't trust Dan Lanning either after the way he cooked his steak.
Well, first off, so we're just going to forget the Ohio State game happened? Like, that one just doesn't matter?
I remember it.
Like, didn't Oregon win that game, David?
They won by one. They changed NCAA rules after that.
Yeah, cheaters!
They won that.
Cheated.
Connor Stallion.
You can say they haven't won many big games. Lost to Washington twice last year. I'm with you on that. We've seen them falter before. But they beat Ohio State, and you feel like that one kind of got them over the hump. So they beat Penn State. That's a big game. Penn State's 11-1. One of the top dogs in the Big Ten. I don't know. I think that narrative's kind of cooked. Better than Dan Lanning.
A more legitimate criticism, I think, and we saw this a couple times last year, is, you know, Dan Lanning being very aggressive, whether it be fourth down or faking a punt in your own territory. Is that the kind of thing we're going to see in one of these big games? Which, if you pull it off, you're a genius, right? But if you don't, that's when the criticism sinks in.
Yeah, getting too cute.
So to Andrew Moorman, he says, is there a better overall defensive line in college football than Oregon? From Mateo, Jordan Burch, Derek Harmon, and Tatum, I don't even know if Georgia and Texas is as deep.
Well, I'd throw Tennessee in that mix too, man. Tennessee's really good on the defensive line. Again, this is an argument where I can, you know, we can disagree on which one of those, that group of teams that we're talking about, who's the best. But I could hear your argument and be like, okay. Like I get that. I can't get the way that, and I know Texas A&M isn't the greatest offense of all time, but Texas was so dominant against A&M and then against Georgia. You know, Joe brought up the point, ETN scored on a lot of short fields. It wasn't like they ran for 300 yards against Texas. I think Texas could have the best D-line in the country. I really think that's a possibility.
Let's go to J.D. Vaughn. He wants to know how much you think Sark will trust Quinn Ewers in this football game.
Gonna have to, man.
He's helped get you here. I mean, is the question, do you think they're going to pull Quinn at the first sign of trouble and put Arch Manning in there like they did against Georgia, even though they said he was beat up?
I don't see it.
I think we're just too far along the yellow brick road for that.
So, all right, let's go to I'm Ducking In. He says, right now, Dylan Gabriel, I think, is the best quarterback in college football. He has been kind of weird with the turnovers. How many turnovers do you think he will commit in the Penn State game?
Well, it's been weird for Dylan because a lot of the turnovers have been in the red zone.
They have been in the red zone.
Like, between the 20s, he's been pretty good. It's harder in the red zone. I mean, you know this better than anybody, David. The field shrinks. It gets a little bit more narrow. You got to be a little bit more precise. You don't have all the room to throw a guy open necessarily over the shoulder. When you look around college football, I mean, yeah, Dylan Gabriel is a great argument to be the best quarterback in college. Now, he's not the best pro prospect. I think Cam Ward and Shadur are. Those are the two that if I was an NFL team, what order I would take. We can argue about should it be Cam or Shadur or Shadur or Cam. But Dylan, as far as college quarterbacks, he's as up there as anybody.
Let's go to Nerf. He says, Franklin at Penn State right now is 1-13 against top five teams. Oregon money line will probably be the best bet.
Well, that goes back to what we were asked earlier. You're saying Oregon's going to blow this game because they don't win big games, but James Franklin's 1-13 against the top five. So, you know, you got two.
Something's
got
to get.
You got an unstoppable force meets an immovable object of not consistently winning big games.
Let's go to the Nittany L. What's up, man, with the $3 donation. Appreciate that. He says, Drew Aller's biggest game is now. It's finally time for him to get over the hump. What type of performance will you see from him against Oregon?
You know, it's a great time before we get to the phone calls. Play the motivational speech
music. Oh, wow. I haven't had this in a while.
Can we get the motivational speech music playing? Penn State. Drew Aller, James Franklin, Andy Kotelnicki. Which name matters the most when it comes to the coaches? I think it's Andy Kotelnicki. You guys all year leading up to Ohio State, Globetrotters, track meet, taking shots, Pfizer, vaccines, dangerous. But then against Ohio State, you get a 10-0 lead and you take your ball and want to go home? You want to take the air out? You put a mask on. Speaking of COVID, you got to take it off this week. You got to go back to being Penn State. The fun, the danger, the risk, the pressure. Take shots downfield. Even if you get up 10, even if you get up 17, damn it, even if you get up 24, y'all have to start embracing the roller coaster on offense. This isn't old Penn State. You can't revert back to who you used to be. There's a reason you fired those coordinators. Because you want danger on offense. Take your shots. Don't back down. Drew Aller, don't be afraid. Full send. That's what I think, Nittany L. That's $3. You want to talk about worth your money.
Wow.
Cyber deal.
Got your money's worth.
How about that?
All right, boys. You want to go to the phone lines?
Let's do it, David.
Let's go to Gannon in Arizona. Gannon, what's going on today?
Is your first name Jonathan?
No.
Dang it. I thought you were somebody else. I'm just kidding.
I really like Jonathan Gannon. I think he's doing a really good job.
I do, too. One of my favorite restaurants in Nashville is called Gannon's, too. It's pretty good.
All right. I'm here to talk
All right.
about my Arizona State Sun Devils.
Oh, talk your it. Go, do you want the motivational music? I mean, hell,
it's
they're having
a moment to shine.
Yeah. No, but I called in the middle of the season, and I was hopeful because I thought we weren't going to be very good this year. Mm-hmm. I looked at what happened last year. I'm like, but I was like super impressed by them in the middle of the season. I was like, dang, they're really winning these games. And then they just kept on winning these games.
Yeah.
And then I just think that they're doing such a good job. I want to get your perspective on them. And I don't know if we're going to be able to beat the Oregons or the Ohio States or any of these teams, but I do think that if it matches up right, we could take down someone in the playoffs. What do you guys think?
Here's what I'll say, Gannon. First off, I can hear your voice talking about this is exactly like how the rest of us feel in college football about Arizona State. It's like they just keep doing it. It was almost like BYU was until they lost, right? Like BYU just keep on winning. Like it may not be sexy, it may not be pretty. Arizona State's got so much momentum right now, and you got to just feel so good about the future of that program. You know what I feel like Arizona State is right now in heading into this game and then possibly the college football playoff? It's like the other night. I hit a $1,600 bet. All right. Shout out our friends at DraftKings. I withdraw $1,300 of it to get sent to me. So now I got $300. You know what? That's free money. I've got $300 of free money. I'll take a chance. What are they going to do? Be pissed? I won $1,300, but that $300 is not going to upset my wife. She's already excited about the $1,300. Like, that's an anniversary gift, dog. So to me, if I'm an Arizona State, who don't put a ceiling on it? What is more dangerous than a team that has nothing to lose? Mm. That's why Arizona State is scary. Everybody talks about Boise being scary, which, look, Genty's a good player. Yeah, you're a Group of Five team that could possibly make the playoff, or UNLV. But to me, Arizona State's possibly the scariest team that could come out of nowhere to play in this thing. Because guess what? You can't hurt them. Mm-hmm. You can't kill what's already joyful inside. And that's what Arizona State is. This season was won when y'all got bowl eligible. The rest, y'all got the cake. The rest is just the icing and the sprinkles and all the goodies and those little hats you wear on your birthday.
Not bad for a team with a projected win total of 4.5 before the season.
Yeah.
Gannon, are they going to win the Big 12 championship game?
I'm going to say yeah, because I've seen Iowa State, and I've gone back and watched some of their games, and I think that their defense is actually really good, but they do struggle against, like, very, like, physical running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And
guess what y'all got?
And I don't know if there's a more physical running back than our running back. I just got to say.
Oh, Scatabiz.
You need to walk into this with unshakable confidence.
Well, that's
if you're an Arizona State fan, guys, like, think about it. You're like, you're getting really close to being an SEC school. Like, you can throw it, you can run it, you can stop the run, and you have super hot chicks, and people are starting to care about it. Like, you're slowly turning into an SEC school.
It's true.
Be ignorant about it. Yeah. Walk in with the most confidence in the world. Oregon, who cares? Ohio State, who cares? Meet us on the field. Our chicks are hot, too.
You want to know, that's a great point, and that sweater just enforces it even more.
Thank you.
Want to know why I think Arizona State can be dangerous in the playoff? Because why the hell not? Why not? That's what I'm saying. So, Gannon, good luck, buddy.
Appreciate it, Gannon. Thanks for calling in.
So we'll see.
All right, let's go to Kevin in Georgia. Kevin, talk to us.
Hey, fellas. I'm a SBG trust tree in the chat. I haven't
gotten
you live in a while since you changed times. I got a scenario for you, and I want you to think. Let's say Clemson beats SMU in the ACC. SMU's still going to get in, right?
Maybe.
Well,
yeah. I think they should, but with the... Wait, let's ask Ward Manuel.
So in theory, so let's say Texas beats Georgia. What are the chances the committee bumps Georgia out to keep Alabama in and SMU?
I mean, Bama will have the head-to-head.
I never want to say never because it's all subjective.
At that point, I don't think they care. Yes, but you will have had... The head-to-head, to me, won't be triggered because you picked up that extra loss in the conference championship
game. That's the difference.
And last year, the thing was, like, they had to get one SEC team in there, right? Well, again, if Georgia had won last year and beaten Alabama in the SEC championship game, I still think Florida State would have gotten in. It would have been Texas who got left out. I think they'll be fine if it's Georgia still in there.
Well, if the committee is going to sacrifice a team on the altar of the playoff, it is going to be SMU. Mm-hmm. It will not be. Think about this. You think they want Alabama in? They want Alabama and Georgia in. Sure. That's why they made the Big Mac. Oh, you like a double cheeseburger? What if I stacked them on top of each other and put Thousand Island dressing on?
Is that what the Big Mac is?
That's all it is.
It's just two double
cheeseburgers? So you think they'd sacrifice this and you for both of them?
Oh, God, in a heartbeat.
In public.
Watch them.
Yeah. You think Julius Caesar got killed in public? Dog.
They'll do it.
They'll do it on the
television on Sunday.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Reese Davis will set Rhett Lashley on fire live in front of God.
And DeBoer matters?
Yeah.
Go look at that guy wearing a visor at Georgia.
Yeah, it's interesting, Kevin, though. That's what makes us so
fun. Great call, man.
Oh, appreciate it, Kevin. All right, let's go to Thad in Kansas. Thad, what's going on?
Gentlemen, how are you?
What's up, Thaddy?
Pulling anybody over today?
I'm off, dude. I'm sitting on my roof putting up Christmas lights, getting ready for the
you can still Christmas pull somebody over there,
Thaddy. Wow, you're on the roof.
Hey, be careful.
That's what I do, dude. Anyway,
that's what I do, dude.
I'm also TJW in the chat. So gotcha. I got some explanations for you about cookies.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Hold on quickly. Can we just tell our audience, you didn't know in All Access earlier, which if you don't have a Daily Wire Plus subscription, you're missing an hour of absolute gold between 11:30 and 12:30 a.m., which turns into p.m. I got asked, my wife asked me a question that nobody's ever asked me before. What is your favorite Christmas cookie? Hmm. So then I got to thinking, really, what cookies are Christmas cookies? And boy, did the chat have some answers. And one of them, somebody said it was like a golden flakes wreath. And somebody said Spitzbuben, which I thought was something you paid $10 like for under, next to the bridge downtown.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Thad.
All right. So Spitzbuben, it's German. It's actually translated to little rascals or little devils because naughty kids can't resist them. And they are shortbread. it's shortbread with powdered sugar and your choice of jelly in between.
Oh, cookies. Yeah. Yeah, you had me.
I'll take a dozen.
You had me before right now. What type of jelly?
At your choice, dude. We like the strawberry. We actually have we did apricot 1 year too, and
so your wife makes you Spitzbuben.
My wife is Spitzbuben, dude.
Wow!
I wish my wife.
You son of a gun!
Oh, hello, and that called
Spitzbuben.
Hey, I talked to my wife already. She said if they want them, we'll send them.
Are you serious? We can get some Spitzbuben here? Doug, I've been trying to get Spitzbuben for the last 7 months.
I thought they went out with Quaaludes.
You can get some Northwest Kansas Spitzbuben.
Golly, I'll be speaking German after I eat a box.
Ben, you're the coolest cop I've ever met.
Why am I wearing Lederhosen?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm already at Beer Fest.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
The other ones you brought up, David?
The half-dips.
Half-dips.
Half chocolate.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Someone in here said sand tarts.
I've heard of those.
Grow up, Jake. Hold on. Wait. Sand tarts?
Sand tarts.
Like, how's it spelled?
Sand and tarts.
Sand.
Oh, like still
sand.
The line.
Sand.
Yeah,
like bags
these are
of
here.
Sand?
These right here.
What they feel like.
Oh, those are gas. Yeah, I've had sand tarts.
See, that, again, it's like, what makes a Christmas cookie? Is it any cookie that you eat at Christmas, or is there a special?
This is all going back to cookie. Die Hard for you, isn't it? This is all going to come back.
I just want to talk about Die Hard.
This is just all funnels back. All right, Thad, thank
you. Oh, let's go to Nathan in Arkansas. Nathan, talk to us.
Spitzbuben.
What's going on, fellas?
Nathan, what's up, man?
Oh, nothing. Just in here with the five-month-old and watching you guys.
Let's go. Teach him young.
Yep. Got to teach him the best sports show in the USA. You know?
Let's go, baby.
You got my vote.
I think it is the world. Nathan, I went on, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's like one of the biggest sports shows in the UK. It's called Talk Sports. And I didn't realize it was in the UK until the producer, before I was about to go on, he was like, hello.
What did you say mean about British people?
Nothing.
Okay.
I didn't say anything. Said nothing about y'all blew a 13 colony lead or anything.
You talking about that time that you saw the Phantom of the Opera in London?
And fell asleep.
That would have been a good talking point for you.
Yeah, I should have.
Yeah, you fell asleep. That would have gone well.
Look, it was 20 minutes. I saw the ending.
Sorry, Nathan.
Sorry, Nathan.
What's on your mind?
Continue.
Two things. One, Blaine, what's the best way to cash out on betonline.ag? Don't forget to use code Booster.
Yes. We're going to win it back. Don't worry. You got a gambling
problem?
What's
the best way to cash out? I don't know if I'm allowed to talk
about it. I will. I cashed out the other day off a $1,600 bet for $13.
Like, do you just need the option? Are you trying to find the option to cash out? Or are you asking me about a bet you want to cash out?
What's the best option?
What's your bet?
Well, no. I'm not saying cash out. I mean, withdraw from it. Sorry. Withdrawal.
See, I'll tell you what I do personally. I do the checks. Checks. You want to know why? Because I want you to take the time to have to write.
Well, look, anything.
I want you to
y'all win money.
Anything under.
Yeah, we win money. Dude.
Like, anything under.
David said withdrawal.
Yeah, anything under 5K.
I thought it was just
under 5K. You don't have to report.
David said, I thought it was only deposit.
I thought it was like a slot machine.
From a taxes standpoint, never withdraw more than 5K.
Yeah, good point.
Mm. I thought it was a slot machine where I keep giving but not getting.
Yeah. Oh, that's what you call
it? I think it's absolutely criminal that they put Alabama in, but they don't put South Carolina and Ole Miss in. And I'm a Mississippi State fan, so screw Ole Miss. But I think it's wrong from the college football playoff committee to, you know, hey, Alabama, you're good enough to get in there. But it's, you're comparing apples to apples if you're looking at Alabama and Ole Miss for the most part.
Here's where I'm at. I can understand Alabama getting in and South Carolina not getting in because there is a head-to-head and there are other equal parts. I don't care what anybody says. The Alabama-Ole Miss one is a very interesting conversation. Out of those three, if I had to pick one team to get in, regardless of personal fandom, I think it would be Alabama. Where I have a problem is, how in the world is Miami behind Alabama but in front of South Carolina and Ole Miss? Like, I don't even think it's a, they all three should be in or they all three should be out. It's that Miami should either be in front of all three of them or behind all three of them. That's my thing.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about 9-3 teams. Why not Illinois?
Listen, thought Brett Bielema had a great response to Lane Kiffin. I thought he had
did.
A great response.
Lost to number 9 Penn State, lost to number 1 Oregon, and then they lost to Minnesota. So Minnesota's your bad loss. All the other three lost teams we're talking about have at least one bad loss.
Because Illinois is not who, David?
They're not the teams we're talking about.
Alabama, brother. That's why.
No, David,
it was rhetorical. I just wanted to throw it out.
Hey, you want Jackson Arnold at Mississippi State?
Man, I don't know enough about Jeff Lebby's system to say that Jackson Arnold would be the best fit. I think Jeff Lebby needs a pocket passer. I think, you know, Jackson Arnold could be that. I think that's where he was kind of missing in Texas A&M system, you know, and, you know, Marcel Reed is more of a running quarterback, and I think that fits Mike Elko's system a little bit better. I really like the Van Buren kid. I think he has a lot of potential. Unfortunately, I think he'll get transferred out, you know, but I do know he came there, you know, for a reason, but man, I think if you gave him another year, especially after this year,
he's nice.
After Blake Shapen, you know, I don't see any reason why we would take another quarterback. I would want some transfers for receiving core and, you know, mainly on the defensive line. You know, we have little to zero pass rush, and we have no, you know, defensive backs that can cover anybody with speed.
So, that's like, what, in my opinion, I think y'all just need best available. I just think y'all need to go get the best players out of the portal you can possibly get. I think that's that roster.
Appreciate it, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan,
for calling, man. All right, let's go to Tim in California. What's going on, Tim?
Hey, boys. How are we doing?
Tim, what's up, buddy? Hey, how you hitting them?
I'm pretty solid. Hey, didn't want to listen or call in this week because I'm an Ohio State guy. And half my family is a Michigan family, and it was a rough week. But
that was a great week.
You guys broadcast after 4th and 31, so I listened to Sunday.
Yeah,
face your fears.
That was that. I've never seen the clown from It in person, but that's about as close as I've ever.
Got a smile.
There's red balloons just showing up everywhere that whole week.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about the Trevor Lawrence slide. Or fake slide or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a 49ers fan. And a couple weeks ago, Patrick Mahomes was going towards the sideline and fake going out of bounds and then spun and then ran for another 25 yards. Yep. And, you know, if he would have gotten hit right at that point, there would have been a penalty and a fine and a suspension. And so I think it's total crap. So I have a solution, though. So my solution is when a quarterback wants to give themselves up, that they have to do a fair catch signal. And within time, they have to do it, wave the arms, say, I'm giving myself up, and then just call it at that point so that no defender can hit them and they can't fake it and keep running. What do you guys think?
Tim, here's what I think. In theory, it's a great idea. I think in practice, it'd be really tough. Like, when does the ref know? If I'm going to put my arm out to stiff arm you or push you away, like, what's the difference, you know, in being able to tell it?
What if you don't? What if the defender doesn't see it?
Yeah, it just crushes.
Now, that's slide's supposed to be, right? The slide is supposed to be you giving yourself up. The problem with this one, it happened at the first down line.
Yeah.
So he's
and
trying to get a first
late.
Down.
Like, what if I do it late? Him. Like, so here's Tim, racked my brain about this. I've tried to go through all the possible solutions when the bullets are flying that fast. Here's the only solution I keep coming back to. Just run the ball, dog.
Play football?
Like, just, you just got to play football. Like,
nah, not, like, not when we're playing football, Jake.
There's no movement. Like, outside of sliding or just taking a knee, like, and even if you took a knee, like, you're technically not down in the NFL until somebody touches you. So, like, to me, we got to be like, dude, look, you either slide, and if you slide too late and you get hit, well, guess what? It ain't a penalty. But they're not going to do that. I'm just giving you pragmatic solutions. Tim, I don't hate the idea. I just think in practice, that could get really, really, really iffy. Now, to the point about Patrick Mahomes, here's where I'm at on that. If, number one, if you have any part of your body in bounds and you get hit, it shouldn't be a penalty.
Right.
But if you're going to call it close like that, the first time that some quarterback does that, like on the sideline and pretends to be going out and then doesn't, well, guess what? You don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. It's just like if Kenny Pickett would have fake slid against me as the referee, buddy, the next time you slide, if it's even close to being late, I ain't calling it. So, I mean, we see this happen in basketball all the time. They'll let him play a little bit. Like, you throw one elbow and it's not too bad. They're like, all right. But the next time you do it, or if the other person does it to you, they're not going to call it. So, I don't know, man.
You, you got
to
stop letting them run. You got to stop letting them run.
See, you just can't.
A gazelle doesn't get to call timeout when a lion's chasing them. Like, you can't let – it's hurting, like, other players as well. Don't let them run anymore. Yeah. You got to stay in the pocket, or something has to happen for you to get outside the pocket. You got to call somebody, phone a friend, give to the homeless. I don't know.
Yeah.
There you go, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for calling. All right, let's talk to Tyler in Florida. What's going on, man?
Fellas, how are we doing?
What's up, Ty?
Pretty good.
Tough times down there, Ty. No. Tough times.
No. Yeah, it's our defense couldn't stop a nosebleed in the cotton ball factory, and now we get left out of the playoffs.
God, that's a good one.
Actually, I'm on the fence about the playoff thing because I think Blaine said it earlier in the week, by the way. Awesome sweatshirt, Blaine.
Let's go, man. Appreciate it.
I'm in the camp of, like I said, Blaine, I think, said it earlier the week. You got three losses, you shouldn't be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
However, I'm also on the, like, and I'm, you know, y'all know me, I'm a huge Miami fan. We ain't play anybody. I mean, Florida, I give them that. But other than that, and you cannot, I'm not saying you should have a murderer's row schedule and not be able to win too, but you do have to play somebody. Or I think y'all have said, if you don't, then everybody's just going to be playing, you know, Southwest Central Tech of the deaf school and blind every weekend.
Yeah, they actually had a good year last year. Nobody heard about
it. Good. They can run the ball really, really fast.
Yeah, you put that beep in, you know what, never mind. You give me trouble.
I'm a teacher, you're going to get me fired.
Yeah.
But what I'm really frustrated in is the lack of, and y'all talked about it, it's just this lack of transparency with the, like y'all were talking about, why isn't Illinois up there? Hey, why isn't Syracuse up there?
Yeah, if
the 10-2 thing is like what you're saying, why is Syracuse above or below a UNLV who they beat?
Well, my
problem.
My thing again, and consistency is one thing, transparency is another. And that's why when David brought up whatever analytical company that the committee uses to find out strength of record and stuff like that, they don't make it public. And they just point toward ESPN's FPI, which ESPN is the media organization that is under contract with the SEC and the ACC. I just don't understand why that couldn't be public info. Like, I'm not... This isn't the nuclear codes. I'm not asking where all of our spies are in Russia. This is about college football. Like, what? I don't understand the secrecy here unless there is something they want to be kept secret. And that's why it opens the door, as I've said multiple times, to conspiracy.
When I pointed that out, someone said I was goofy for pointing that information out.
No.
Like, well, that's the same person that would say, man, I wonder if Anthony Fauci's getting
till this,
by
like,
the company.
Yeah, till this day, this is what gets me the most. And I don't know why we're not talking. Ward Manuel said verbatim, what put Bama over the top for Miami was the last three games. Miami went 1-2 by an average of 4.5 points to a ranked Syracuse and a Georgia Tech team that took Georgia to 8 overtimes. And Bama went 2-1 against a garbage 5-7 Auburn team, destroyed by Oklahoma, and beat Mercer. On what world, what planet does that make sense?
What I think Jake talked about yesterday, and it was a great point. I was actually saying it while you said it, that you want people to stop calling conspiracy and it's a Bama, if the fix is in for Bama, then how come every time it turns up roses, it's for Bama?
Yeah. Like
that's where it gets. And like you said, we don't know. So people are going to have conspiracy theories because nobody is telling us how this is being done.
Yeah, it's why we can't figure out who killed JFK, because they won't tell us. Like, we're like, well, it's the CIA, or it's Lee Harvey Oswald, or it was Castro, or it was Blaine.
You know, but you can't say anything. We'll talk offline then.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, Tyler.
Yeah, I got it.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right, let's go to Jake in Florida. What's going on, Jake?
Hey, fellas. So I've been doing some thinking about the playoffs, and there's something funky. You know, I'm a well-documented Alabama fan, but I still feel like there's something funky with the ranking system. I feel like that there are either two separate rankings. Like there's a set of rankings that they have, they talk amongst with themselves. And then there's the other set that they release for everybody to talk about, right? Because it feels like every time they release something, there's always some controversial talking point that everybody wants to, right. And I think that I think they keep a separate list amongst themselves, because, or either that or they're feeding somebody insider info, because you see this parallel with the money in Vegas. Every time the odds keep going up, they go up in Alabama's favor. And I'll be honest, as an Alabama fan, I keep track of this. I look at the odds, and every time the odds move in our favor, last year and this year, I know we're getting in.
Yeah.
Because you follow the money. So someone is either leaking information, or there's a list of teams we don't know about in a specific order that they have ranked that they talk about amongst themselves that they don't release.
You know what I wonder, Jake, to that point? And again, this is what happens when you don't make the numbers public. It leads to discussions like this, and there should be discussions like this. To me, I actually think you're close. I'm starting to believe I don't think they talk about anything in these meetings. I think they go to these meetings. They have drinks, they have food, they talk about their families, Ward Manuel gets a script of what to say, and then they release the rankings they're told to release. I'm almost to that point. Because when you listen to them try to defend it, it's so waffled and it's so contradictory that there's no way you could have, and Blaine just read it, like from his lips, there's no way you could have sat in a meeting and come to that conclusion. They may have the meeting. They may all show up and go into a room, but maybe the reason that they don't make it to where we can hear it is because they're not really talking about college football. I think they're sitting there waiting, saying, all right, when are they going to fax us the rankings we're going to release? All right, well, they just faxed it to us. They gave Ward Manuel some talking points. Here's what you're going to say. Because why even talk about the rankings if you're going to release a different list of rankings? I don't even think they talk about it now.
To me, it's like I'm not a big conspiracy, a little bit, but it's like the government with aliens to me. That's what it's like. They'll tell you one thing, all right? They'll show you little clips that are blurry. It's not really good. You can't really see it. But that's just what they show you. But behind locked doors, they're probably sitting there having lunch with them.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, you'll get to see what we want you to see, but we're going to make the decision what's best for us, what's best, what we think for the public behind closed doors, and what's best for our pockets.
Yeah. Great call.
There are no aliens, right. And, by the way.
Almost mathematically impossible.
To Jake's point, I think he's right. They don't talk about it, because have you noticed how close their rankings always mirror the BCS rankings that come out? It's almost like they wait for the BCS rankings to come out, and they're just like,
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's just swap these two teams here and make it look a little bit different.
It's like, do we really think they're like a jury that's sitting there and there's 10 of them that are in one camp and two of them that's in another, and they're arguing back and forth about the amount of sacks Miami got in a game? I don't see these guys doing that. I don't think they're doing it. What debate? You think they're having a debate behind closed doors? They're like, guys, what, you know, Miami yards per carry compared to South Carolina yards. I don't think
these guys. I feel
like
when Barry Alvarez was doing it back in the day from Wisconsin, wasn't he more transparent?
And I feel like it was.
See some footage like that? I thought I remember having
like, you never see again.
I haven't seen that this
year. Like, that's why I think if somebody stuck a bug in there, they'd be sitting around. They'd be like, Dan, how's that Apple stock doing? Bitcoin's going up really. Denise, she good?
Doing pretty
good.
She liking
her new husband?
Shout out, GM.
Appreciate it, Jake.
Yeah.
Thanks,
thank
man.
You, Jake.
Anyone else on the line, please call in tomorrow. We'll
it's Flaming Dragon Friday.
And a little update here. Bill Belichick is getting interviewed by North Carolina for the head coaching job.
Shut up.
North Carolina, the Panthers?
No. Tar Heels.
The Panthers?
North Carolina.
Bill Belichick in college football?
Brown, Bill
no
Belichick.
Way.
North Carolina, Mac Brown.
We're on to. We're on.
Is he going to bring that his wife with him or whatever?
Look, we're on.
I just read from.
We're on to Georgia Tech.
We're on to Georgia.
We're on to Georgia.
We're on to Georgia Tech.
He's got a new quarterback, John Beatty.
Yeah. They got Tom Brady's twin brother, Tom Brady. All right, tonight. 1-1 last night. Memphis. I had you 11.5. You won by 10. UConn. Money line started out ugly against Baylor. They're really not. That Liam McNeely kid, though, that big, the guy, the kid who played in Texas. Pretty. How about last night? Mount Verde Academy, you want to talk about an incredible basketball team? Liam McNeely, whose future star at UConn, was playing against his point guard.
Again, they probably won a lot of
games. Baylor. They're at Baylor and UConn. Good luck.
Yeah.
All right, tonight, David Montgomery, first touchdown, plus 550. I know he hadn't scored. I don't want to hear it.
That you took that.
I don't want to hear it from you.
Disgusting.
Your fantasy season's done. The fantasy's over.
He hadn't scored a touchdown in the last 2 weeks.
That sounds like he's like my wife in a couple
can't
of weeks.
Can't wait to watch
he's
Jahmyr Gibbs score the
all right, so give me David Montgomery, first touchdown, plus 550. Then the Lions. I know they're beat up on defense. All right, but give me them over the Packers in a great Thursday night football game. -2.5, Romeo Doubs out, Jair Alexander out. Give me the Lions.
All right, I like those. Give me the Detroit Green Bay over 50.5 at -134. And then largest lead under 14.5 for the game, -130.
You hit the one in the Browns game, right?
I did. I did. I would have hit both of them, but Jameis Winston threw two interceptions on purpose.
What do you got, Cousin Eddie?
All right, hey, congratulations to Alabama actually coming through yesterday, putting a whipping on Georgia.
North Carolina.
Auburn just fell apart.
We lost at Duke by 6.
It's not good enough.
God.
Jared Goff, give me the Goff man. Over 1.5 passing touchdowns.
Like it.
I think a lot of points are going to be in this game. Don't think David Montgomery is going to score the first touchdown, but I hope he does. Jake, just for you, -120. Give me the Packers. Okay. +3.5, -118. The Packers are just surprisingly just really good this year, in my opinion. And I think Josh Jacobs, the last couple weeks,
Came on
and looked extreme. It's almost impossible to tackle.
All right, Ace, what do you got? Going to take the Packers money line.
It's not a bad bet.
Him and Peter LaFleur, +145, and then Goff, 250-plus passing yards at -1.25. That's 125 if you're scoring at home. All right, let's get to the chat.
All right, let's get his donation. If you donated today, guys, really appreciate it on this side. $10 donation from Charles Sherrow. Appreciate it, Charles. My good friend Heath has been losing a lot of bets lately. Jake, please give him the motivation he needs to get back on that horse and not to give up regardless of how bad of a gambler he is.
All right, play the music. I've been waiting for this one for a while. Everybody's addicted to something. Doesn't make you a bad person. Hunter Biden just got pardoned. He's addicted to crack. It's the president's kid. Maybe you've struggled gambling. It's the waves, man. It's the up and the down, Heath. But like we say all the time, you got a gambling problem? Don't worry. Tonight, we're winning it back. Maybe she kicked you out the house. Maybe, you know, your parents aren't talking to you. Maybe you shouldn't have took that $15 from they keep right next to the jar in their bathroom. But they probably put $15 back. You need to go get that. And tonight, you need to put it on David Montgomery to score the first touchdown at +550. You're not going to win this back taking somebody money line at -134. It's going to double your money. We don't want to double our money. We want to triple the already quadruple profits. It's a Koch Brothers situation.
So you go put it on David Montgomery. Tonight, he will do it. He will come through for us. And he just wants you to remember that whenever you're in a hole, you keep digging. Because eventually, you're going to reach China. And they love sports gambling over there. All right.
All right, I love it.
That's our first YouTube strike.
Yeah.
It was a good run.
Hey, yeah. Look, I feel like I'd have been.
Because I said Hunter Biden's kid?
Probably.
You're like, yeah. Oh, that was more.
Well, there's a couple candidates.
Being here for 3 years. It's going to find out an extra from David. Appreciate David's show segment idea for when the playoffs are set. What each playoff team wants for Christmas other than a national championship.
Oh, God, I hate that. I'm just kidding.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's like when we did the Which Teamer songs.
Yeah.
That was funny.
$2 donation from Derek Carson. Appreciate it, Derek. Thoughts on Madden Lamaleva to Arkansas?
Iamaliava? Look, if your last name's Iamaliava, I believe in it at this point. I mean, I used to believe in, you know, I never really believed in Ugalele. I probably butchered that. But I believe in Iamaliava. I mean, Taylen Green's going to be the guy next year. I'm interested to see what happens with Petrino. That's what I'm interested to see. Mm-hmm.
$5 donation from Ben H. He says, for the love of everything holy, can Penn State win a game that matters?
That's why I was laughing at the Dan Lanning can't win a big game. It's, again, he's playing against James Franklin. Which, by the way, did you see James Franklin and Mike Locksley got into it because James Franklin scored that touchdown or kept trying to score? James Franklin was like, dude, we had our fours in. You had your ones in.
It matters now, though.
They got into
it. It does matter. Yeah,
scoring
like,
margin matters
I'm surprised to see
there's no more excuses.
Not in every conference.
What do you mean by that?
Not every conference has a scoring margin as their.
But what about for the playoff?
Playoff
though?
Committee. I don't care what your conference looks at. Yeah.
That's the problem, David.
Do they?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Please tell me if you find out.
Let's go. $10 donation from Shane. Appreciate it, Shane. Gents, the fam and I were just in Kenya and had to wake up at 3:30 a.m. to watch the UGA versus Georgia Tech game. Let's say I was initially regretting my decision, hoping to see UGA get the SEC crown this Saturday.
He said he woke up at what time?
3:30.
Man, if I was in Kenya, I'd just be worried about the lions and the cheetahs and stuff.
$5 donation from that one guy. Appreciate it. He says, guys, do you think the quarterback from Georgia Tech will enter the portal?
He's been playing for 5 years.
God.
How much more time does he have?
David, he's got three left.
He played 3 years at Texas A&M. He was there when Kellen Mond was there.
Yeah. He was there when Kellen Mond's dad, or mom, Helen Mond, was there. I don't think so. I think Brent Key runs a tight ship. The other guy got in the transfer portal. The other quarterback, Phylon.
From Georgia
Phylon.
Tech?
Yeah. Paisan? God, why can't I remember his last name?
$5 donation from Hugh Is Froze. He says, Jake, who do we want at quarterback? But really, who do we need at quarterback?
Well, it's like, again, who do I want? Who do I need? I need Johnny Mateer. Get him down here stat. But it's probably not happening. He's probably going to Oklahoma. So if I can't get Johnny Mateer right now, who's in the portal that I want? Let's get salty. Give me Caden.
$2 donation from David's favorite Badger. Love you, Blaine, but your sweater is trash. Ho, 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 ho.
I love that sweater.
I hate Badgers. The worst. $5 donation from Q's. Appreciate it, Q's. Perhaps the most impactful pickup in the transfer portal could be whoever gets KC Concepcion from NC State.
Nice.
Elite player who could get you a natty.
NFL player.
For
really
sure.
Really nice.
$20 donation from WTH. He says, currently driving to Waco to watch my high school. The Kareem Dio Academy Lions take on the First Baptist Academy Saints in the Texas 3A State Championship. Can you give me a team motivational speech, Jake?
What are the teams?
They are the Kareem Dio Academy Lions and the Academy First Baptist Academy Saints.
What did you just say to me?
Kareem Dio Academy Lions.
The Lions versus the Saints.
There you go.
You asked me for the names of the schools.
Play the music. Well, I don't speak like... Alien or whatever that was. Let's play it quickly. Lions versus the Baptists. That never turns out good.
Chiefs.
The Chief Baptist? Look. We're just talking about Kenya. All right. Lions scare me. You're playing in the state championship in Waco. So if you meet somebody with the last name Koresh, run away. They're not telling the truth. It's a trick. You guys can do it. Oh, look, I grew up with a bunch of friends that are Methodists and Baptists. Some were Baptist Methodists. I don't know what that means, but somebody does somewhere. You guys can do it, because I believe in you. And Lions versus Chiefs, that may be a preview of the Super Bowl, David.
Ooh.
It comes down to it. Good luck, my friend. Be safe on the drive to WTH.
All right, I love it. Let's go to a $5 donation from Matt. Appreciate it, Matt. Nick Anderson, OU wide receiver, just hit the portable. Bill Belichick interviewed for the UNC job, according to On3. Crazy offseason incoming. Hook him. Go eat them dogs.
Yeah, God, the offseason is going to be nuts. It's going to be nuts next week. I just want to let's play these games, dog. That's what I'm excited about.
$2 donation from Landon 101. If Brian Driscoll comes back on your show, just know you're welcome.
Yeah, he said he's coming on.
All right, he said he's coming on. That was live. That's how we opened. Let's go to a $5 donation from The Gambling Man. He says, what round one matchup are you hoping for? Give me number 12 Bama at number 5 Notre Dame with Bama catching +2.5.
I want Tennessee and Ohio State. I don't care where it is. That's what I want.
Last donation of the day from The Hog. Appreciate it. Rest in peace to Arkansas legend Bob Holt.
Yes.
A truly one-of-a-kind person who left a lasting impression on everyone he met.
Yeah.
Prayers up for the Holt.
Yeah. I've seen that. It's been going around. I hate to see that he passed, but man, what a great life lived. Affected a lot of people. There's such a cool clip of the Arkansas basketball players talking to him after one of the games in a press conference. It's condolences to his family. That's a tough loss, but like I said, what a great life lived.
All right, let's get to this poll. Who would you take to win it all? Oregon or the field?
Go first.
Field, 75%.
Field, 74%.
The field, 69%. Yeah. The Oregon, 31%.
That's what we call a good old-fashioned
percent. What was the name of that cookie from Germany?
That's what I said, Spitzbuben.
Spitzbuben.
We're getting some.
That's right.
Good.
God, shut off that.
It's been a while. Anyway, we appreciate you guys. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Have you a nice, nice couple of spits and boobins tonight on us. All right, y'all are the best. We'll see y'all tomorrow, Flaming Dragon Friday. And like the chances.
I get a dub.
Yeah. Of David Montgomery not scoring the first touchdown tonight. That's right, I said it. Going. Ooh! Gone. If you're on audio, you'll never see how good that catch was.